Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
That's great. The last 5 minutes leading up to the U.S. women's soccer team winning the World Cup in 1999 are thrilling, including the clutch move by our next guest. When U.S. goalie Brianna Scurry set us up to win that day, us, the U.S., up to win that day with this epic block in the penalty shootout. Let's listen.
Ying will go next, the first starter for China to take a penalty kick. The shot. Save Scurry!
What followed were more tense penalties until Scurry's teammate Brandi Chastain hit the winning penalty, and the rest is history. Also, what followed for Brianna were some high highs and some low lows. She is in the African American Museum in D.C. representing Title IX, whose anniversary we celebrated on the show yesterday. That's a huge high. She was the first Black and openly gay player in the U.S. women's national team. A low was when she almost lost it all in a year, when she lost sight of what was important. Brianna has a new memoir out called My Greatest Save, the brave, barrier-breaking journey of a world champion goalkeeper, with stories of her life growing up in Minnesota and playing youth soccer, becoming state champs in 1990 with her high school, Go Tornadoes, to playing in her first Olympic Games, but also her struggles with her own mental health, with depression and a horrible injury that ended her soccer career. Scurry writes in the book, there are 10 teammates in front of you and nobody behind you. You are literally the last line of defense. In most games, your performance will have more impact on the outcome than any of those other 10. It is a daunting responsibility, but it's what you sign up for when you are a goalkeeper. And I loved it. With me now to discuss her story is World Cup and Olympic champion and U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer, Brianna Scurry. Brianna, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. That was awesome. That's the best intro I've ever had, I think.
Right
on.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Right on. You know, in the book, you write about your parents quite a bit. And some soccer parents, sports parents, have reputations for being a little bit extra and a little bit nuts on the sidelines. But you write that yours were pretty chill. How did your parents support you in your early years of playing soccer? And how did their tone and their tenor affect you?
I tell you what, I was so blessed to have amazing parents, and they were so supportive. When I was 8 years old, I was watching the 1980 Lake Placid ice hockey team on TV, with mom and dad on either side of me. And when they beat the USSR, I told my mom, I want to be an Olympian. And the amazing thing about it is that they nurtured that little seed of inspiration. And I think that's the difference for me. It all starts right there. My parents were so supportive. They wanted me to set my mind on whatever I wanted to be and go for it. They were always there for me. At soccer games, they attended almost every single time. They sat on the side closest to my goal, patiently, quietly. Occasionally, my mom would say, get that ball out of there, when she thought it had been in my end for too long. But other than that, she was pretty calm and respectful. My parents were absolutely amazing, and I am who I am today because of them.
And we should point out they had a lot going on, because you have how many siblings?
The youngest of nine.
Youngest of nine. And yes. Money was tight occasionally. And, you know, one of the details in the book I think is really interesting is you write about, you know, needing federal assistance, as many families do, and talking about those big blocks of cheese. Mm-hmm. And you talked about how much you loved your mother's grilled cheese, what she did with that.
Yes.
And I thought that was really important. It's a subtle point, but I think it's an important one.
I agree. In the situation that we were in, my mom and dad always made me feel loved and cared for. And not being a wealthy family wasn't really something I understood or noticed, but because we had so much love in the family. And my mom and dad were really great at making lemonade out of lemons. And government cheese was a great example of that.
My guest is Brianna Scurry. The name of her book is My Greatest Save. So you grew up in Minnesota. Now, even in 2022, I went and looked. Minnesota is 83% white. And you share.
Surprise.
That's now. Think about when we were kids.
Exactly.
And you write a lot about being the one and only in class and in school. Mm-hmm. How did those dynamics affect you day to day now that you're an adult? I mean, think about it when you were a kid, but also now as you look back at it as an adult.
Absolutely. My color never really bothered me at all. What it was, it seemed like other people had issue with it. So my first encounter with racism, there was a young man at the bus stop that I was at, and I was in grade school, and he started calling me darky, and I didn't understand. And the thing I remember more about most about that was he was so angry. His face was beet red. He was just spitting and yelling at me, calling me darky. And I didn't understand. I'm like, what, why are you being so mean to me? And it was literally because of the color of my skin. I hadn't done anything to him. We were just two kids at the bus stop. And so that was my first example, my first experience with being Black, that was bad for me. But in my journey, I always felt like I could just do whatever it was I set my mind to, like my parents had told me. And so going through being the only African-American family in that small town you mentioned, but 83% white now, it was probably just us back then. So a 99.9% white back then. And so it was an interesting dynamic, but it never hindered me. It never bothered me until someone else seemed to have an issue. And so I just used that. I played four sports when I was in high school. And in this day and age now, looking back on it, I am grateful to be the only, to have been that person, because I feel like I was a trailblazer and I set an example that was a great example, not a poor example, for so many people that looked like me or felt like me to be authentically who they were.
I was watching an interview with you and you got very choked up and came to tears about being represented in the African-American Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C. in the Title IX exhibit. Tell me a little bit about what people see when they see you in that museum and what that moment was like.
So when you go into that museum, obviously, if you've been in that, you start from the bottom, the first floor, the bottom floor, and it's so heavy and it's dark and it's scary and it's upsetting and you feel that and you rise up through the floors and you get to the third floor, which is where the athletics, the sports exhibit is. I'm part of the Game Changers exhibit. I am next to amazing greats, like great athletes like Althea Gibson, Muhammad Ali, Tiger Woods, Serena and Venus Williams are next to me. And what you'll see is I am the exhibit and the example of Title IX within that Game Changers exhibit. You'll see a fantastic picture of me, which is the picture that was taken right after I made that penalty kick save, my authentic jersey that I wore making that save, and then a pair of gloves that I wore, and a newspaper, I think it's Sports Illustrated or Newsweek, front page talking about Title IX. I am so honored. And I cried about making it because I didn't know that my body of work meant that much to my race at the time. And so seeing those curators come and ask me to participate was truly a great honor.
You tell a funny story about how UMass, your coach said you had a chance to play for the women's national team and you said, "What's that?" Tell us a little bit how you ended up. You said you played four sports. Why was it soccer and why was it being the goalie? Why was that going to be you?
So because of Title IX, I was able to play soccer in college. I got a whole lot of attention from the four sports I played in high school. Soccer, I was an All-American. And in basketball, I was All-State. And I had 70 different colleges that were interested in me coming there. So I was able to have the best possible options playing soccer, clearly. And so I needed a full ride because my mom and dad didn't have a lot of money to pay for me to go to college. And so because of that, I chose the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I went there on a recruiting trip. Jim Rudy recruited me. He was an amazing coach, and he's the one that told me that there was actually a national team and that he thought I would be able to play on it someday, and I was good enough to do that. And I took that faith that he had in me and used it and believed him when he said that, just like I believed my parents, and was able to parlay that faith into my own and get on the national team.
My guest is Brianna Scurry. The name of the memoir is My Greatest Save, The Brave Barrier-Breaking Journey of a World Champion Goalkeeper. You are very frank in the book, and it's right up front that you
struggled with mental health issues during the course of your career and your life. Mm-hmm. And there was one specific year when you kind of took your, I'm going to say took my eye off the ball, but I just stopped myself. When you, between 1999 and 2000, when you really sort of lost sight of what your goals were. Would you mind sharing what happened that year and the impact it had on you?
Absolutely. And for the longest time, I didn't talk about that year because it was so painful for me. So after the World Cup in the July of 99, I was essentially, you know, we were America's sweethearts. I was easily recognizable on the street. I was gaining all this momentum and I got a lot of attention and a lot of offers for appearances, you know, flying to New York, flying to LA, back and forth, doing a lot of different things. I was on the Jay Leno show, Rosie O'Donnell, all these amazing things. And I literally lost track of what was important, which was watching my diet, making sure I was training. And also I was 28 years old. So my metabolism was starting to change. Over those course of those several months after the World Cup, I literally gained 30 pounds in about five or six months. Mm. And in 2000, we had a new coach come into the ranks, a former player, April Heinrichs, and I went to training camp 30 pounds heavier. And she looked at me and she was absolutely appalled and disgusted. And she essentially stripped me of my starting position. So if you go back and you look at the records, you'll see that in 2000, I only played 3 games out of about 40 for that year. I lost my starting role. I did not play a single minute in the Olympic Games. Now, the good news is because of that experience and being stripped of that honor, I decided to get on the ball when I was given a photo to sign by a reporter in the mail. And it was a picture of what I looked like in 2000 at that training camp in early June, or excuse me, in early January. And I was appalled and disgusted myself. And I realized it was me. I self-sabotaged. Mm. It wasn't anybody's fault but my own. And from there on, I started a new feeling of attitude, a new intensity. Went to the gym, started checking on nutrition, looking at the internet to see how I could be my best Brianna Scurry I could be. And I did. I started a new me and I was actually better than I was in 99 after that.
Brianna, in terms of your physical health and sports, you had this horrible head injury that ended your soccer career. What is something that you would like people who don't play at this level to understand about, I guess, danger maybe is too hard a word, but maybe the lowercase d, about what your bodies have to go through?
Yeah, what I would say is, so athletes do their sport for a lot of different reasons. I played soccer because I was passionate about it. And I was actually very lucky for majority of my, you know, national team career, 14 years, never had anything major like this occur. I had 2 concussions before this. This concussion completely changed my life, in part because I never saw it coming. So usually I would see the ball or the player from the front. This player came from the right-hand side, hit me in my temple with her knee, and I wasn't able to brace and get ready for it. And I slipped into the depths of a horrible depression with the emotional piece of concussion, and also with the physical symptoms. And for 3 years, I was in that place until I finally got a procedure that helped me with my headaches and then a year of therapy. What I would say is this: head injury and mental health is really difficult, in part because you can't see it, but you feel it. And people who are in that position have a hard time sometimes admitting it or expressing it to other folks. And what it is it's a really detachment from who they are. And all these things that they may have been interested in before, they're no longer interested in. And so you can see the signs as someone who is a friend of someone who's going through this. The best thing I can say to a person who is going through it is get help. It's okay. Don't be ashamed. You can get help. There's help available out there. And what I would say to someone who's caring for someone like that is don't try to fix it, just listen.
Brianna, you write in the book about being gay and that you knew from a young age that your parents had spoke to you about it once. And then after that, not a really big deal for them right. and their family. You are who you are. Right. We're talking to you on the Friday before Pride, the big Pride parade in New York and around the country. What are you thinking about today?
Oh, I have to say, I'm so excited that it's the 50-year anniversary of Title IX. I'm so thrilled to be on my book tour and being able to share my story with everyone. I love Pride Month. It's such a great celebration of who people are authentically. But there's also a lot of clouds, you know, circling right now with the Roe v. Wade decision that came down today from the courts. It's very disheartening for me as a woman. Also, as a gay woman, you know, a lot of laws being, you know, written and put into practice against gays and against trans kids. It's very disheartening in that way. But you know what? We have to keep fighting. We have to keep going. Even though there's clouds, this is a downtime maybe for some of us, but you just have to keep going to the next day, putting your one foot in front of the next and moving forward and having resilience and faith that a change will come.
The name of the book is My Greatest Save, The Brave Barrier-Breaking Journey of a World Champion Goalkeeper. It is out now. Brianna Scurry has been our guest. Really, really nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to meet you.